and welcome to Original Lines, the podcast where we talk to original people living the creative life. Today's guest is Seattle artist Susanna Bloom. Susanna is an incredible painter. Her work has been exhibited in New York, California, Germany, Ireland, and of course, right here in Seattle. She's won numerous awards and residencies, including Seattle's coveted Nettie Award and a residency at the Irish Museum of Art. Hello, Susanna, and welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thanks.
It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I think I'd like to just kind of dive right in and ask you, did you always know that you were a painter?
Yeah, I think I did. There have been times when I've experimented with other media, and always come back to painting. So drawing and painting is what I've done my whole life, and that's what I always come back to.
Yeah. Were you encouraged, as a painter, art in general, as a child? Was that?
Yeah. I mean, I was allowed to colored, I remember sitting on our linoleum floor in the kitchen, like just coloring all the time. And I used to sometimes draw on the walls, which wasn't as encouraged. when my parents moved out of the house I grew up in, my dad found all my drawings on the back of the closet door in my bedroom. So,
nice.
Yes. And my uncle was an artist, is an artist. So I had that as a reference point, as a possibility of something I could do. Mm-hmm.
Is he a professional artist?
He has been. Now he makes clocks, actually. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. But he, went to grad school for painting and worked as a professional artist for a while.
So. Sometimes it's kind of hard if you come from a family, you don't really have, because what a professional artist's life is like, what people think a professional artist's life is like, is very different. And if you don't have that sort of role model, it's sometimes hard to figure out how to make all that work.
Yeah. I mean, that part, yes, I feel like I'm still figuring that out. And yes, but seeing him as an artist, like knowing that that was something that I could do.
Yeah. Yeah. You ended up getting in New American Paintings? Mm-hmm. Almost like right out of college, right? So mm-hmm. that was probably
grad school.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was probably pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I apply almost every year. Mm-hmm. And I've done it 3 times. So it's nice to have some acceptance letters, like among the rejection letters.
Yeah. Well, for listeners who don't know, New American Paintings is a super honor, right? It's an annual thing that comes out, and what is it, usually like around 50 artists or so?
That's
of all of American painting. And it's kind of the standard for what's happening in American painting. So at least one of them. So could you tell me a little bit like about your process, like right now? How do you go about, what is your day like? I mean, do you just come in and paint, or what?
It's rarely that straightforward. Those are my favorite studio days, when I just come in and get to paint. But as you also, I'm sure, know, like being an artist is so many things besides actually getting to make the work. So that is definitely my favorite part. There's also documenting and applying for things. I spend a lot of time applying for things. I don't know, just like all the business side of it, like emails and
social media.
Social media. Yeah. And keeping up with what other people are doing and showing up for that. And try to have a little bit of time each studio day to actually work on art. So, and I don't have a set schedule. I usually, like, I take my son to school in the morning, and I usually walk the dog after that, and then get to the studio by 11 and and do the businessy stuff first, and then the second part of the day I usually get to work on paintings or planning paintings, drawings and stuff.
Is it easier for you to have a project or have a deadline that you're working towards? Does that help?
Yeah, I think it helps. I tend to work well with deadlines. And so it does help me focus and kind of make myself do things more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And the sense of urgency, I think, for me, tends to yield greater efficiency. So, and it seems like I often am working towards deadlines So that's kind of just the way things are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. It's so many guests on here work either they do part of their work for commission, part of their work for themselves, or all their work for themselves for, you know, for shows. And it seems like everybody loves doing the private work, the work that's just for you, but are so much more productive if there's either a client or a deadline or something. So
yeah,
that seems to be pretty,
pretty
par for the course. So, So what about your actual process? You paint, I mean, your painting is seems to be very much about like place. It's very rooted in a place.
Yes.
Do you paint on site or draw on site or do any plein air or how do you?
I take a lot of pictures in the place that I'm going to be basing paintings off of. And I do some drawings in my sketchbook. And I try to experience the place in as many ways as possible. So I like to eat and sleep and talk to people in the place. And, so that all of those experiences inform the paintings, and in more of a way of like a personal narrative and not so much what literally gets represented, but, I guess meaningfully or symbolically represented.
Right. This is going to ask you, can you describe how it literally translates? Like your experiences into, is it color or is it like quality of line or whatever?
Yeah.
Or can you even really describe it? Is it more of a,
I can try. I do often, when I'm doing paintings, I'll do like a series at a time of maybe like 7 to 10 or 12 paintings. And I will base them, usually as a starting point, each painting is based from a photo that I took. And so I use that as a starting point for like composition and color. And I like having that. I kind of like starting out with those limitations that I can then, negate or like go over or
argue
change
with.
My mind. Yeah. but I like having the sort of problem to solve at the beginning. And so I start with that. And I start by actually really looking at the photos and remembering, being there. And I do a lot of my sketching and drawing and kind of preparatory work actually on the painting. So I start by paying a lot of attention to the photo and then I sort of pay less and less like as I work on the piece. So it's like I start by kind of drawing on the canvas and then underpainting what I see as like the underlying colors kind of lighting up from inside the, which is kind of different from place to place. Like the color I'll choose to be like the base layer. Mm-hmm. And then I'm kind of working on all the paintings at the same time. So I just kind of build up from the base layer up and from across the series. And then I'm starting with acrylics, like a thin watery layer of acrylics and then a thicker layer of acrylics and then oils. And so I love it in the end, like in paintings that you can see, the watery layer of the thin layer of acrylics just over the bare gesso and where you have more built up layers of oil. I like when there's evidence of the process.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems that in your paintings, when you do that, that layering process and the varying thicknesses, it almost adds an element of time. It seems like to me, like this is a time, even if it's just time spent looking or time spent, it's like, this is a glancing part. This is a part that you've spent more time looking. It brings an element of time into it that, to me, that's what it feels like. It's almost in a poetic sense that it's time, but yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I like that.
I mean, maybe attention and time, the way time and attention are related, but yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you, did you develop your style of painting, the working kind of back and forth with the photographs that you describe? Was that something that just came naturally to you? Did you have to experiment a lot to find it?
I did have to. It was a process that I reached after a lot of trying different things. And I think it's like the way of painting I was doing out of undergrad and And going into grad school was more just, I guess, intuitive, like not really based on anything I was looking at. And then in grad school, I got really interested in this concept of working from a sense of place. And I was experimenting with like, you know, real space as opposed to imagined space and public space and private space. And then I realized that I was interested in like a personal experience of specific places. And so I guess it was after grad school that I really started doing that. And just feeling, I mean, I think I tend as a person, just as a human on earth, like I orient myself by with this in a sense of place. Like that's how I, feel grounded and good about participating in the world is, some sense of place and a sense of landscape, like being landscape. Like I feel kind of landscape based as a person. So,
yeah.
Not just as an artist. So
do you paint much of Seattle? I mean, a lot of things, like the last few things I've seen of yours has been from other places.
Yes. So I think maybe after I'm done with this big project I'm working on, I think I do want to do like my own neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to tackle your own space, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I know I'll have to think about this, like, cause I think there's been this sort of like romantic investigation of other places and sort of escapism maybe. And so even if the places I'm escaping to with painting aren't particularly idyllic, it's still an escape into a different visual experience. And so it will be good and interesting to really look at my own landscape that I live in. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, I think that since everybody kind of have, well, a lot of people kind of have exoticism, you know, of a place mm-hmm. that's different or a culture, something that's slightly different, you know, like it evokes stronger feelings in you than home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so easy to take your home space just kind of for granted, or you know what feeling it's going to have. So you've already had it and you're like, it's just there. It's going to be tougher to.
And right. Well, and it's just, different. It's like you see things differently when you're seeing them for the first time. It's like everything is more like mm-hmm. it's the, I think I love that like intensity of like seeing a place, mm-hmm. experiencing a place for the first time. And so it's a different thing to kind of tune back into the place that you, are with all the time. So that will be a good exercise for me, I think.
Well, I look forward to seeing the results.
Yeah. It'll be awesome. A while, but yeah.
So let me, you also do, you do many other things. You talked about earlier the life of a painter. There's also, you have taught, you curate for places, you do just all sorts of, all these semi-peripheral things that go along with, how do you juggle all that? And you have a son. How do you do all that?
I often feel like I'm doing everything, not well. So it's like, I mean, I'm just doing a little bit of everything and it often kind of feels like everything is in slow motion, you know? I mean, I'm moving really quickly just to keep up, but it's like the progress I'm able to make in all these different areas is not as fast as if I were able to like concentrate and just do one thing. So it's like, I mean, it is, I guess it is a juggling thing and one thing slides and then like if I've ignored something for 3 weeks, then when I finally, you know, return to it, it's like, then I have to focus on that and then put something else on the back burner. And then I have to focus on that and then everything, you know, so it's like a constant. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it important to you to do all, I mean, obviously it is important because you do, is it important to you to keep all those things kind of in your life? Or do you ever yearn to just like to concentrate on like two things, like painting and your son or something? Or?
Yeah, actually I would love that. I would love to just focus on painting and parenting. But the other stuff is important too. And I get some curating opportunities like with my part-time job here at Inscape, and I enjoy that.
Okay. Well, this looks like a good time to take a break. So we'll be right back with Susanna Bloom.
Hey there. Did you know that you can find Original Lines on both iTunes and Stitcher? So whether you have an iPhone or Android, you can always catch the latest episode. Be sure to subscribe to us, and we love reviews. Thanks.
Okay, and now we're back with Susanna Bloom. Susanna, I understand you have a project underway right now called the Red Country Project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so I decided after Trump was elected president that I wanted to go to as many red states as I can and make paintings about my experiences in each state. So I'm taking short trips. It's not really a grand road trip around the country. It's like lots of short trips to the states that voted for Trump. And I'm asking people there where they think I should go in their state. And then I go to those places and take lots of pictures and do some drawings and then come back here to Seattle and make the paintings.
Cool. You've been to, what, two or three states already?
I think it's like seven.
Oh, have
yeah.
you?
Wow, yeah. Okay. Mississippi, Louisiana, Arizona, Montana, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't finished writing and painting all of those places. Like, I'm going to be painting these states like after Trump is gone, hopefully.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I'm visiting faster than I can paint.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. So how's that been? Have you told people about about the project, and what's your response?
Yes. It depends, like, how much detail I go into depends on the person and the place. And I'm getting better at, I realize that it's important to share my story and where I'm coming from with these people that are sharing their stories with me. And yes, but it depends on the place and the person and who I'm talking to.
Yeah. Are you staying with friends or relatives, or do you just go and pick a place just kind of at random and then start from there? How do you pick the place?
I'm applying for residencies and staying with friends and family. My wife's family is they're all in the South. So we visit my in-laws every year in Florida. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like friends of friends. And then I'm going to Tennessee next week. And that was a friend of a friend from grad school who invited me to come give a talk at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, where she teaches. Mm-hmm. And then I was invited to do a show in an artist-run space in Nashville. So it's kind of just word of mouth. Like I put a post on Facebook saying I was doing this project, and I had a lot of people invite me to stay with them, and that was great. So I kind of am going where the opportunities are arising. So that's largely how the schedule has been set up. And mm-hmm.
So how have the people in the states, right? They're directing you to mm-hmm. locales, right? Like sites. Yeah. How is that? What kind of sites are they sending you to?
That has been super interesting. And I've really loved the range of places that they've told me to go. And it's interesting, like the way that people interpret my question so differently, which is, it's all good. Yeah. You know, like I am equally happy to go to beautiful parks or like this girl in Savannah, this young woman who was working in a hat store that we walked into, told me to go visit, or at least look at the outside of the house that her grandmother lived in. And she, the woman told me she was homeless several times in her life, and her grandmother is the one that took her in and where she stayed till she got back on her feet. And her grandmother's house was a place where it was kind of like the community center, like people, like family members and friends and neighborhood people would all come and gather there and eat. And so we went to the house and took pictures of the house, and I have yet to paint it, but and then so there's places like that. And also in Savannah, I got lots of good stories in Savannah. It's like, it was interesting because like the people there, like almost everyone or everyone I talked to, like all I said was, can you tell me where you think I should go? And it can be a personal place or a beautiful place or an ugly place, or a place that's important culturally. And everyone in Savannah somehow like knew immediately a personal place, like at the top of their heads that they just shared with me. So it's like this young man and working in the famous cemetery in Savannah. I think it's the Bonaventure, if I'm remembering that. But he told me to go to the oldest restaurant in Savannah, which is where he had his first job. And he got the job as a teenager working in the restaurant. And when he got the job, he did not believe in ghosts. But when he was working there, he had some experiences where now he absolutely believes in ghosts. And so it was a life-changing place for him. And so, yeah, so it was interesting to go. I guess that is my favorite thing, is when people are telling me to go to places that they have shared some kind of story with. But I'm also happy with, you know, because it's really normal for people to want to kind of share what they're most excited, most proud about their state, you know? So it's like, this is the most beautiful place I can tell you to go that really shows off where I live. And so I'm excited about those too. And so it's a big range of places.
Yeah. Well, has visiting the, visiting all these red states and talking to these people personally, I mean, I know you're not like, or it seems like you're not engaging the political directly. Has it affected you in any way? Do you have just being in the communities and everything? Do you feel any differently now?
I do. I feel different in that. I mean, the reason why I decided to do this project was I was feeling so negatively towards half of our country. And I mean, the truth is our country is not divided by red and blue states. You know, I mean, if I wanted to go to a red state, I could just go over the Cascades, you know? So it's redder than parts of Texas. Like,
yes.
So it's not like, that's not how people are divided. That's partly what I'm drawing attention to is the way that our whole political process and the Electoral College has made these kind of symbolic, iconic chunks of land and people that have turned, you know, it's become like a rivalry between sports teams that's totally ridiculous and has nothing to do. And it actually has not much to do with how people actually voted, because obviously the popular vote, like, is not what decided the election. It's this concept of red and blue states that decided the election and the Electoral College. And so it's a cultural construct, mm-hmm. you know, it's a story that we're all engaged in. And so so I think when the election was decided, I was buying into that. I was participant and engaged in this, the way that our country was being divided and talked about. And so I was effectively like hating like these huge chunks of land, you know, in our country. And
right.
And I know, like, from just how I am, how I experience the world and how I paint, that I can't hate a place that I've been to and painted. Like, it's kind of there's somewhat of a love act for me, like painting a place. Like, so I don't end up hating places after I go to them. So it has changed me, and I'm seeing the places for what they are. Whereas in my, you know, I hadn't been to most of these states before, mm-hmm. This project. So I'm seeing them for the first time. And so now I have actual personal experiences to inform my impression of them, as opposed to this abstract idea of, you know, this red swath of,
right.
Our country. So it's totally changed my personal experience, like, of these places and my feelings. I mean, it's given me something positive for myself to focus on right mm-hmm. now. And, And it's also given me an excuse to talk to people that I don't usually have an excuse to talk to, and to ask a semi-personal question right off the bat. Like, that's not something I usually do. So it's, right. It's been good for me to have that opportunity and to have a personal exchange with people in parts of our country that I, you know, hadn't had the opportunity to interact with. So it's absolutely changed me. I mean, not politically, like I don't vote anytime. I mean, I feel even more, you know, I feel more adamant about my, you know, voting and my own, you know, I mean, that's the longer Trump is president, the more solid my beliefs about all of that are. So it's not so much a, you know, and I'm not, and likewise, I'm not going there trying to change anybody's mind. Like that's not, I don't have an agenda of, that. So it's just about having a personal experience.
Well, that's when you made that distinction, it made me think there were several projects based here in Seattle. I remember right after the election, it was Crosscut with the Gray Project. They sent people out to the red counties, and they would gather coalitions of people, like 12, 14 people, from that were definitely voted blue, and then sent them and they would have weekend long, like 2 day long workshops, like dialogues, mediated dialogues back and forth, but they did engage directly on the political issues. Mm-hmm. And they said,
I did hear about that.
Yeah. I think it was the Gray Project or something like that. And Crosscut Magazine was the one that presented it. But apparently they went well for the first day. And then by the end of the second day, everything had kind of deteriorated. Everybody went back to that sort of rivalry kind of a thing.
Right.
But they were focused directly on the issues that are divisive, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of focusing on the things we have in common, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. like the love of this place or the love of whatever, you know, so it enhanced that, right? That aspect of mm-hmm. red team, blue team.
Right.
You suck because you're the red team. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's right.
I don't think we had so much of that 10 years ago. Maybe it was just mm-hmm. me, but I think that seems like a new.
I think it's definitely gotten worse. I mean, I look back on my, you know, intense feelings of disgust and when Bush was elected.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's like a drop in the bucket, like,
yeah.
compared to what we're dealing with now.
Right. I mean, like, people like not talking to, I mean, people like whole families dividing over that. I mean, that didn't happen with Bush, even though that was bad enough, but it
right.
was, you still didn't actually actively hate
an
entire half of the population. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of which half you are, the other people are terrible.
But. Yeah, no, that's gotten worse for sure.
Anyway, let's get back to your project. The other thing that was interesting to me is you are reading, alongside doing this painting and these trips, you're rereading Moby Dick. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Herman Melville's very, very voluminous
classic.
How is that working? Is that?
It's kind of been a really amazing sort of subconscious journey made the decision to read Moby, because I hadn't read it before this project, but in the back of my mind it had always been, I'd had this concept of it as this epic journey of trying to find find something and somehow I guess conquer it in some way before it conquered you, you know, like so kind of like the dramatic narrative is what stuck out for me before, you know, reading it. And once I decided to read it, it's like, I have this great edition with this wonderful, introduction that's talks all about, how Moby Dick was Herman Melville's, I mean, one of the books where it's really about his grappling with America and with his relationship to his country. And I actually had no idea when I, you know, decided to read that. And so I'm now reading it. It's like, I'm seeing the symbolism and and I'm identifying with many of the characters. Like, I do partly identify with the monomaniacal Ahab, who's like in pursuit of this whale and totally determined. And then I also kind of identify with the narrator, who's more of the observer, So I think with this project, I feel kind of part monomaniac and part, you know, just super like on this mission, and then also just, part observer. So, and so I'm reading the book slowly, and at about the pace that I'm painting. And so each painting has, part of the title of each painting is a chapter title from Moby Dick. So it's kind of, it's a poetic subtext. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I feel like people necessarily have to get to have an entry point into the painting. But I, for me, it's adding a layer of meaning that I think is interesting, and that I'm seeing so many parallels with. In fact, it's so funny that in one part of at the beginning of Moby Dick, when the narrator, Ishmael, decides to go on this journey on a whale ship, and he is not a whale hunter. he's I don't even know if his official occupation is really talked about, but I mean, I'm thinking a writer, like obviously like Melville, but he decides to go on this journey kind of for, and it's a working journey. Like he's working as a member of the crew, on this whale ship. And, but it's like, he's also doing it for his own sense of curiosity and his own, personal journey that he feels like he needs to take at this point in his life. And so at the beginning of the book, like he's talking about how he imagines himself like on the cover of the newspaper, like, and it's like sandwiched between headlines, like at the top of the page is like U.S. at war with Afghanistan. And then the next is Ishmael embarks on, you know, whale voyage. Like, and he imagines that, you know, he's going to be top news and everyone's going to care that he's embarking on this journey. And I just had to laugh, like, obviously at myself, like I, you know, U.S. at war with, you know, half the Middle East. And now, and here I am embarking on my own journey with our country. And so it's like, it feels epic and also totally small, you know, at the same time. So it's,
With your project, I hear through the grapevine that you're about to be launching a Kickstarter for it. Is that correct?
I am. And it will probably be in full force by the time this goes live.
Awesome.
I think. So I am going to do a Kickstarter, because I need to fund the second half of the project. So like Trump's presidency, I am nearly at the halfway mark for my project. And so the Kickstarter is going to start October 2nd and go through Election Day, so November 6th.
Awesome.
So it's my midterm support blast.
Very cool. We'll try to make sure to get the word out about that, because
that would be great.
That's super. But I guess let me ask you, we need to wrap up here pretty quick. So let me ask you the question that I ask everybody. Mm-hmm. It's why do you think that people make art?
I think it's a way of participating in the world. I think it's a way of experiencing, and it's also a way of connecting with other people. So I feel like for me, it's both.
So it's definitely, I mean, it's obvious you don't make your art in a vacuum. It's definitely a two-way street there. Yeah. So, okay. All right. Well, Susanna, where can we find out more about your work?
My website is susannabloom.com.
All right. And what's the Kickstarter? How would we look that up when it's out? Is it going to be, can we just look up Red Country Project?
Yeah. If you look up Red Country, I think you'll find it right away.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
This has been thank awesome. You so much for having me.
Okay. And this has been Laura Allen for Original Lines. And to find out more about us, visit www.twoponiespress.com or find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or any of your other favorite podcast services. See you next time.